Backlash was live in Lyon, France for the very first time. Show just wrapped up a little while ago. You know, last night they had SmackDown in that very same building. And I saw there were people who posted photos who were in the building last night that they got notifications on their watches telling them that the decibel level inside the building was at a danger level. It was like 100 dBs or above 100 dBs. And so they issued a warning to everybody in the building that for a sustained period of time at that volume, it could cause temporary hearing loss. That's how loud it was in that building last night for SmackDown. So you can only imagine how loud it was in the building for this show here. I'm trying to figure out the best way to even describe what this was. This was by far, now we've had over the years a lot of crowds, post-WrestleMania crowds, other international crowds, or even the one last year in Puerto Rico. We had Backlash 1 year ago, right, in San Juan, where you get a really hot crowd. You just have people that are just happy to be there. Maybe they don't get WWE very often. They don't get pay-per-views very often. And so they go there, and these people are out of their fucking minds, and they're doing all kinds of chants and soccer chants and stuff. I cannot recall an event from start to finish for the entirety of the 3 hours where the crowd was as lively and energetic and just out of their minds as this crowd was in Leo. This is by far the loudest crowd that I have ever seen as far as a sustained reaction for any show in WWE history. And I hope that it's not that long before they can revisit and go back and reward them with another show. Because this was incredible. And just think about this. In a little over a month's time, right? We're only about 6 weeks away. WWE is going to be bringing Clash at the Castle to Glasgow in Scotland. So all you Scottish folks out there, you got to have to up your game, man. They're going to be going there for Clash at the Castle. I'm expecting something very similar, if not better than this, when they go there. But now you know the strategy, part of the strategy behind these international PLEs that Nick Khan said, you know, we got to bring these events to all these different places all over the world. This is one of the reasons why, because you end up getting reactions like what we had here for the show, and the atmosphere is just incredible. It's infectious. Now, what they also announced, and I'm waiting on another very big announcement that has not yet been made as I am sitting here right now, WWE is going to be announcing very likely the location for WrestleMania 41. It's very likely going to be Las Vegas. They have not made the announcement yet. It is going to take place at some point over on NBC during the pre-show for the Kentucky Derby. So we may have to break in here at some point with some breaking news. You guys will keep me posted on that. But WWE made an announcement tonight during the show that Backlash had the largest gate of any arena show in WWE history. Now that's great for them. That's great for WWE. All right, congratulations. Not so much for the fans, though. I look at it a little bit differently. You have, what, 12,000 people, I think. Somewhere between 12,000 and 13,000 people in the building tonight, which is a healthy crowd. Not the biggest arena crowd that they've ever had. They put 20,000 plus in buildings before. You had 12,000 people in the building, and you just did your biggest gate. You know how I read that? I read that as you have gouged the fans, and God only knows what the ticket prices were for this show. I would love to know from people who were in attendance tonight in Lyon how much their ticket cost them, especially for like a really good, decent ticket. I can only imagine what these ticket prices must have been if they only now set the gate, the largest gate for an arena show in the, what, 6 or 7 decades that this company has been in existence? I don't know that that's something I would be gloating about. As a fan, I'm kind of offended by that. But hey, for WWE, congratulations. For them, their business is booming. Now, as far as this show is concerned, 5 matches. That's it. I thought during the week they were going to add 1 or 2 more, and they never did. There were no pre-show matches. It was a 5-match card. It was what I like to call the Triple H special. This is something he did routinely with NXT. He would keep those takeover specials to 5 or 6 matches. He didn't want to overfill them with matches. He wanted to make sure the existing matches had time. This is a formula that worked out very well for this show tonight. They had the entrances. They had to know coming into it that the crowd was going to be electric. You saw what happened on SmackDown last night. So they let it breathe. And everybody who came out and got a big reaction, the announcers laid out, you know, in some situations, they milked it. They had these great wide shots of the arena showing everybody losing their mind and doing the Jey Uso thing and just everything else. So they had plenty of time for that. The matches had plenty of time. We had a lot of long matches on this show. We had a 30-minute almost main event between Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles on this show. So everything had time, and I think it was the right strategy here, even though you look at the card and go, oh, five matches, that's, you know, not much of a pay-per-view card there. You know what I liked? Other than this show, this was an excellent show. Helped very much so by the crowd. Without this crowd, it's a good show. With this crowd, it's an excellent show. That's the difference that a hot crowd can make. But I'll tell you something I liked, and it might be a minor thing to some people, but it was something that was very noticeable to me. No LEDs all over ringside. Did you notice that? There were no LED encasements for the ring posts. There were no LED aprons. There were no LEDs on the barricades. It was just like an old school traditional wrestling ring setup. And I liked it. I didn't have these flashing advertisements and flashing lights in my face for the entire show. It was nice. Some people maybe didn't even notice it. I noticed it. And they don't do that very often, but for whatever reason on this show, they didn't do that. And I liked that. I appreciated that. In the main event tonight, Cody Rhodes, after finishing his story at WrestleMania, had his very first defense of the undisputed WWE Championship against AJ Styles. And they went out there and they had an excellent match. Almost 30 minutes long. There were no surprises. There was no interference. The lights didn't go out even after the match was over. They played it straight. Cody beat him straight up. What that means for Cody going forward is a question mark because they have nobody prepared for him now on the SmackDown roster. Randy Orton would be the most obvious opponent. I don't know that they want to go right into Randy Orton. I'm not sure they want to do that right now. To me, Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton, I mean, if anything, that's a SummerSlam match. That's a WrestleMania match. I don't think they're going to go right into that. That tells me that we have not seen the last of Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles, even though AJ got beat straight up. Really, no reason to do a rematch, but I think that's exactly what we're going to get. And that would be fine. They have nobody set up for Saudi Arabia in a few weeks, so you may as well milk it and get one more match out of it. As great as this match was tonight, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't mind seeing it one more time. So that's my guess as far as what's next for Cody Rhodes here. But the other big story coming out of this show is that we have a new addition to the Bloodline, and it is not the name that most people would have thought coming into this show. The newest addition to the Bloodline, not yet anyway, not Jacob Fatu, it is Tongaloa. Tongaloa from New Japan Pro Wrestling. Tongaloa, the brother of Tama Tonga, the son of Haku. He walks out there. Actually, he doesn't walk out there. He came from under the ring, but he's out there at ringside. Helps his brother. Helps Solo Sikoa get a win over Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. Here's Tongaloa, who the WWE audience has never seen before. And the only thing I could think of when I'm watching this is, where's the video package? I don't know who he is. How am I supposed to know who this man is if there's no video package? Remember all those debates? All the people say, oh, AEW, they throw all these people on TV. I don't know who they are. How am I supposed to know who they are? Where were all those people tonight? Where are those people? I didn't get the video package here for Tongaloa. You'll survive. You'll be fine. Just had a laugh at that. But yes, Tongaloa, who nobody had mentioned. There was no news reports about him. Nothing from Fightful. Nothing from The Observer. Nothing from PW Insider. Nothing from The Torch. Nothing from anywhere. Wrestle Votes. Nobody said a word about this man. I didn't even know what his contract status was. I hadn't even thought about him. And there he was, a nice little swerve there by Triple H, who had to know that people were expecting someone other than him, and then to throw that person in there. Slick move there on his part. But he is now part of this new Bloodline, and that makes this even more intriguing now going forward, because we still now have to wait and find out, when are we going to see Jacob Fatu? He has signed with the company, so we know that. Just a matter of when, and it's a matter now of which side of the Bloodline is he going to be on? Is he going to be part of this new crew with Solo and Tama in Tonga, or is he going to perhaps be on the other side of the aisle? And maybe we will see Jacob Fatu aligning with Jimmy and Jay when they eventually get back together. Maybe he'll be on the same side with Roman Reigns. And all of a sudden, it makes this Bloodline Civil War concept that much more interesting to see which direction they're going to go in. I'm going to talk more about that. I'm going to talk more about this entire show because we also have new women's tag team champions, oh, by the way. They are Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill, probably to the surprise of no one that they would walk out with those titles, and it was not always pretty in that match, let me tell you, and we will talk about why that is. But we had other news that was broken. Here during this PLE, we got the brackets for the Raw side. We got the list of matches for the Raw side. Now, these matches are all taking place on Raw this Monday night. This is shaping up to be a loaded show on Monday. We got the Raw side of the brackets for the King of the Ring tournament and the Queen of the Ring tournament. The finals of these tournaments will take place at the end of this month, May 26th or 25th, 25th, I believe, in Saudi Arabia. But they are starting the tournament this week on Raw and SmackDown. We are going to find out the SmackDown side of things on Monday. They'll give us the matches for Friday that are coming up. But here are the matches that they already announced coming up on Monday night. On the women's side, in the Queen of the Ring, we have Ivy Nile going one-on-one with Zoe Stark. Yes. Yes, indeed. Gareth. Gareth with the super chat dropping it on my head here on a Saturday afternoon. What's going on, Gareth? And everybody else dropping super chats. I'm going to get to all you folks. Don't worry about it. I got you covered. Don't worry. We got Ivy Nile one-on-one with Zoe Stark. We got Shayna Baszler going one-on-one with Zelina Vega. We have Lyra Valkyria, the newest addition to the Raw Women's Division, going one-on-one with Asuka. And we have Io Sky going one-on-one with Natalya. Now, if we are to assume that the Raw talent are all going to be on one side and the SmackDown talent will all be on the other side, and if these matches that they listed them in are in bracket order, if we were to visualize it, then we could be looking at tag team partners going toe-to-toe. We could be looking at Zoe Stark one-on-one with Shayna Baszler. And we could be looking also on the, you look at the other two matches that they announced here. We could potentially be looking at Asuka one-on-one with Io Sky, right? Two members of Damage Control. I think that that will likely not be the case. I think it's more likely we end up with Lyra Valkyria going one-on-one with Io Sky in the semifinals. So that is the way that that side of the bracket is shaping up right now in the Queen of the Ring. On the men's side, this is what it's looking like. Now, this is what I'm excited for. We don't even know all of the people that are in the King of the Ring yet, but just based on what they announced here, I'm licking my chops here, waiting for TV this week. We have Drew McIntyre. On Monday, he's going to be going one-on-one with Finn Balor. We have Kofi Kingston going one-on-one with Rey Mysterio. We have Ricochet going one-on-one with the newest addition to the Raw roster from NXT, Ilya Dragunov. I wasn't sure if they were going to put Dragunov in this tournament. He is in. That's great news. I want to see him go deep into the tournament, and he may just go one more round. But deeper, certainly, than the first round into this tournament. But the final match that they announced here for the Raw side, Gunther, who already declared, Gunther was the first man to declare for the King of the Ring. Gunther is going to go one-on-one with Sheamus. And when they made the announcement and they put the graphic up on the screen in the building, everybody reacted big. So did I. So did everybody else when they heard this announcement, because that match is going to be fucking fantastic. We get one more Gunther and Sheamus match, even better. If the brackets line up the way that they look, we could potentially have Gunther going one-on-one with Ilya Dragunov in the next round of the King of the Ring. Didn't think we would get to it this quickly. No guarantee it's going to happen, but just the mere possibility that we could get Gunther and Ilya Dragunov in the King of the Ring, sign me the fuck up. I said this last night on the stream. If they give these matches time, on television, you never know. You got the commercial breaks that are very... they're very intrusive sometimes, but if they give these matches time, this has the potential to be one of the best King of the Ring tournaments or tournaments that they have ever done, which would be a far cry from the last few King of the Ring tournaments that we have seen this company do. Give me Gunther and Sheamus. Give me Gunther and Dragunov, please. And thank you. That's going to be fucking awesome. So again, we'll find out what the SmackDown matches are going to be on Monday night. This is your WWE Backlash 2024 review. I am the Solid Monster. Like, subscribe. Super chats are open. 500 likes. You heard me. 500 is the goal to do Be the Booker. If we can hit 500 likes on this video, we will do that at the very end of the stream here. That's going to be up to you guys. Memberships are open. I want to say thank you before we get into all this here. Robert Elbrink just became a Sound Off superstar. Robert, thank you. And a shout out to Justin G for gifting 5 channel memberships before I went live. Justin, you're a beast. Anybody who wants to can gift channel memberships as well. So thank you guys for that. Let's dive right into this here. We opened this opening match. Holy shit, this opening match. We opened with Kevin Owens and Randy Orton against Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga. This was Tama's first televised match in WWE. This was the craziest opening match that I think I may have ever seen on a WWE pay-per-view. I've seen some great opening matches, but in terms of just insanity and chaos and carnage, I can't think of another one that was as nuts as this one. With this crowd, no less, going crazy for everything these guys were doing, especially Nick Aldis came out, got one of the biggest pops of the entire night when he made his announcement. Kevin Owens entered first. Obviously, he got a big reaction, as he did last night on SmackDown. So he stood in the aisle for a while. He was soaking it up. Meat Huncho. Is that Meat Huncho? Meat Huncho with 10 or 9? 9 gifted memberships from Meat. Welcome to all of our new channel members. Love it. And this crowd loved Kevin Owens, so he stood there for a while. Randy Orton came out next. They sang his song, and they did that with a few people on this show. They sang Randy Orton to the ring. So after Solo and Tama walked out, the crowd started chanting, "We want Roman." All 4 men came face-to-face for the stare-down. They started going at it, and when they did, the crowd exploded. It got out of control very quickly. They pointed out that the bell had not been rung yet, so the match was not yet official. And so they sent a bunch of people out there to try to break these guys up. Corey Graves wished the referee, Dan Engler, good luck in trying to keep control here. You had referees, you had producers, you had security geeks. They were all running out to try to keep these men apart. We had Owens hitting stunners on 2 security guards. Out comes Nick Aldis, and he's got a microphone in his hand. And like a father scolding his kids, he says, "Enough. Enough of this." He said, "If this is how you want it to be, this match is now going to be a street fight." And he called for the timekeeper to ring the bell. The people exploded for the announcement. And at that point, it only got more chaotic. Orton and Sikoa, they brawled into the crowd. Eventually, Owens and Tama Tonga did the same, but they were in a different area. After disposing of Tama, Owens ran all the way over to where Orton and Solo were brawling, and he attacked Solo Sikoa. Eventually, they ended up back at ringside. Owens climbed up onto the barricade. He gave a splash to Tama on the floor. Orton stood on the barricade, on top of the barricade. He was playing to the crowd, and he was acting as if he, too, was about to do a splash, and then he very calmly climbed down from the barricade. And he thought better of it. See, that's the smart move there. It's not about... There's an expression, work smarter, not harder. That's a veteran move there by Randy Orton. So Orton slammed Tama Tonga onto the announce desk. Didn't break. You know, it's that kind of scoop slam where he throws him up into the air and he falls on the desk. He did it a second time and the table did not break. There was a Prime hydration station because Logan Paul had his Prime logo on the ring mat. He had his Prime hydration station in the corner over where the announcers were. The Prime hydration station got knocked over. It got caught in the crossfire. So if you got it, pour one out for the Prime hydration station, which they reassembled later on. But unfortunately, it became a victim of all of this mass chaos going on. So Orton and Owens, they pulled out a garbage can from under the ring. The fans wanted tables. Orton slammed the can over Tonga's head. And then Owens threw the lid at Solo, Frisbee style. He pitched it to him right in the gut. Orton tossed Owens a kendo stick, and he battered Solo with it. Orton slammed a trash can over Solo's head, and then Owens laid Tama Tonga over the announce desk. Orton then just started blistering this guy with kendo stick shots. Orton and Owens both pulled out tables to the delight of the crowd. Orton slid his table inside. Owens set his up on the floor. So Owens puts Tama on the table. He gets up onto the apron, and he hits a splash off the apron through the table. Meanwhile, in the ring, Solo caught Orton with a Samoan drop, put him through the other table. Solo then turned Owens inside out with a clothesline. Then he leaned a table up in the corner. He tried to run him into the table. Owens reversed it and sent Solo flying and crashing through the table in the corner. Tama Tonga returned. He clotheslined Owens, and then they had like a close-up shot of Tama Tonga's back. And man, I mean, the welts were showing. I mean, you always see some welts on their backs and on their arms and stuff when they're hitting each other with kendo sticks. But man, these were solid welts. These were like bright red welts. You could see the blood under the skin. It felt like his initiation here into this company. So Randy Orton, he did not hold back with those kendo stick shots. Tonga went to ringside. He brought a chair into the ring. Orton rolled back inside right behind him. And Tama Tonga turned, and he spotted him, and he got all fired up. He came at him with the chair. Orton ducked it, hit the snap power slam. Orton hit the RKO then on Tama Tonga. He had him pinned until Solo broke it up. Solo then took Randy out to ringside. Orton ended up on the announce desk. Solo Sikoa, he climbs up onto the announce desk, and he is teasing a Samoan spike. Now, I have no idea what doing the Samoan spike on top of the announce desk is supposed to add to it. I don't really understand the logic behind that. I don't know why this was necessary. But then I just remind myself that this man is not a Rhodes Scholar. I mean, he's a Samoan savage. So probably not a lot going on up there, right? As far as how they portray Solo Sikoa, he's kind of the silent savage of the bloodline here. But anyway, it didn't work out in the end regardless, because Randy Orton was able to turn it into an RKO on the table, which did not break, and Orton clutched his surgically repaired back. He was selling the back pain. Owens returned to the ring. He slammed a chair over Tama's back, and then he set up the chair. And then he picked up another chair, and he slammed it over Tonga's back, and then he set that chair up next to the first one. So after two more chairs got set up, Owens placed Tama Tonga across the four chairs, and he went to head up to the top rope. Tama, though, got up and cut him off, and Tama went for a superplex. He was trying for a superplex. Owens was able to reverse it into a fisherman's suplex, a fisherman's buster, onto the four upright chairs. So you had these chairs all sitting upright there. He puts this man with a fucking fisherman buster through the chairs. That was an insane spot. Not one that I would have wanted to take. And that looked like it was the end of Tama Tonga. Seems like Owens had the match won. Before the referee, though, could make the three count, someone drags the referee out under the bottom rope into the floor. And my first thought was probably the same first thought that a lot of you had. This must be the way they're debuting Jacob Fatu. Even from behind there for a second, it looked like it might be Fatu. Then they got a close-up of his face, and it wasn't Jacob Fatu. It was Tongaloa, another one of Haku's sons, the brother of Tama Tonga, and his former tag team partner in the Gorillas of Destiny in New Japan Pro Wrestling and the Bullet Club. He has arrived. He has returned, I should say, here to WWE. This is not the first time that we have seen Tongaloa in WWE under that name, yes. But once upon a time, he was Camacho. Once upon a time, he used to come out to the ring with Hunico. Once upon a time, he was a jobber on the show. Those days are over. Now he finds himself in a much better spot than he was all those years ago, because he's part of the bloodline. And if you got that blood in you, you know your spot is going to be protected. So this is a new and improved Camacho. This is the Tongaloa version. So in the ring, Solo hits Owens with a Samoan spike. and then pins him to win the match for the Bloodline. Paul Heyman has a shocked look on his face and looked as surprised as anybody to see Tongaloa out there. And a very concerned Heyman tries to keep the Bloodline from inflicting any more damage. This was the craziest opening match to a WWE pay-per-view that I can ever remember seeing. Between all of the chaos, right from, I can't even say the opening bell, even before the bell. Through the opening bell, the crowd reactions to everything that these guys were doing, and just pure insanity the entire way through. And Triple H gives us a nice little swerve there. With the debut of Tongaloa, when people were expecting to go right, he decides to go left. Nobody was talking about Tongaloa. I did not see one single news report about him or his contract status. Nobody was asking about him. Just came out of nowhere, which honestly made it even better, because you didn't see it coming, because you weren't bracing yourself for it and expecting it. So, you know, I wrote here, I said Haku equals new tribal chief. Haku may be the new tribal chief here. It's all of his sons here. I mean, they may not be blood, but still, they're his sons. And here they are debuting on this show. I think we know who the real tribal chief is now. All hail Haku. Now, I guess the question is, how long before Hikuleo joins them? You got a 6'8" member of the Bloodline. You know damn well that they're going to want to bring him in the minute that he becomes available. I don't know when his contract is up, but I would not at all be surprised in these next few months if we see Hikuleo as part of this story as well. I was not expecting the Gorillas of Destiny to reunite here in WWE in 2024. But here we are, and now G.O.D., if you assume the two of them are going to be teaming, G.O.D. is one hell of an addition, you know, to that WWE tag team division on SmackDown. If you don't know, 7 times IWGP tag team champion, these two guys, both more the brawling type, work better together. You know, when I think of Tongaloa, Tama Tonga is good. Tongaloa, I've seen Tongaloa on his own, and he's nothing special. As a singles, nothing special. As a team, though, as part of G.O.D., that's where he found his most or his greatest success, and I think the same will be said for him here in WWE. Much better off being part of this crew, much better off doing tag team matches with his brother than doing stuff on his own, I think, just based on, you know, what I've seen from him before. I think it's just a better spot for him to be in. Tongaloa is not the wrestler that Jacob Fatu is. And so we await now to find out exactly what his role is going to be. But G.O.D. against the Usos, SummerSlam, I think that'd be a hell of a fun match. I think that's the direction we're headed in here. I don't know the nature of Jimmy's injury. Apparently Jimmy Uso is legitimately injured. I don't know what the injury is. I don't know if it's a knee injury. I don't know if it's a neck injury, an arm injury, a concussion. There was no specifics given about what the injury was, other than Fightful just said that he's hurt. Now, the last time Jimmy Uso got hurt, he tore his ACL, and he was out for a very long time. That gave rise to the singles push for Jey Uso. That doesn't happen if Jimmy Uso does not get hurt and have to take time off after WrestleMania 36. So hopefully it's nothing that serious. But we don't know when Jimmy will be back. Let's assume Jimmy is going to be back in these next few months. I think G.O.D. and the Usos at SummerSlam is very doable. I think that's the natural match for them to work towards. Where Jacob Fatu fits in all this now? You know, it's fun to think about. What role would you have in mind for Jacob Fatu in this Bloodline story? He could still link up with the heel side of the crew. He could still join up with Solo and Tama and Tonga, and they would make for a hell of a foursome. But then the numbers start to not be so even anymore. And so I'm looking at this wondering, maybe we go a different way with Jacob Fatu. And maybe when it's time for him to make his debut, maybe he's on the other side of the aisle. You know, maybe he is aligning himself with a reunited Usos. And then we get 3-3, right? We get Jacob Fatu, we get Jimmy and Jey. On the other side, you have Solo, you have Tama, and you have Tonga. Interestingly, two sets of brothers on both sides. And then when it comes time for Roman Reigns to make his comeback, the story could be, which side is Roman Reigns going to be on? Roman Reigns is now, he's gone, right? He's missing out on all of these developments, and when he eventually returns, Is he going to side with his cousins and reunite with them and be on their side and Fatu's side? Or is he going to be on the other side with Solo and those guys? Right? That could be one way that they go with this story. I think that's a possibility. And let's say Roman lands then on the quote-unquote babyface side. Maybe you get Roman, you get Fatu, you get the Usos. On the other side, you get Solo, Tama, Tonga, and The Rock. When The Rock is ready to come back, now you got your four-on-four. Now it's all even Steven. I mean, hell, you could do a War Games match with that. I just don't know what Rock's availability is going to be. I don't know what his plans are as far as when he plans on wrestling next. With Rock, who the hell knows, right? It may not be until WrestleMania next year. But if Rock is going to factor into this, now you've got 4-on-4, now it's all evened up. So it's exciting to think about where they could take this. There's so many different ways they can go with it, but what they are doing so far, I will say, I'm loving it. I'm loving it. They have breathed new life into the Bloodline story by adding some new faces, and we're not done yet. We have at least one more, at least, yet to be added. This thing could keep growing. I mean, my God, there are people who are completely tired of the Bloodline and saying, how much longer could this go on for? They keep adding members like this. This thing could go on for years. Not a year. This thing could go on for years. Okay, they got a good 3.5 years, almost 4 years out of the first iteration of the Bloodline. Okay, that was only part one. We could have part two, part three. They could just keep adding members infinitely. I don't know how long it's going to go on for, but what they're doing right now, I think, is great. And I am very curious to see which side of the aisle Jacob Fatu lands on. Then we had a triple threat match for the WWE Women's Championship with Bayley defending against Naomi and Tiffany Stratton. As Phil mentions Hikuleo, I just talked about Hikuleo. I literally just mentioned Hikuleo by name and his contract status. You got to keep up, brother. You got to keep up. I said at least one more member. There could be several more yet to come. Naomi and Bayley, they were pumped by the crowd reaction. They had big smiles on their faces when they first came out. And they chanted something in French, and Bayley clapped along, and she was mouthing the words, "I don't know what you're saying." That was me for the entire pay-per-view, by the way. They were chanting things all night long. They were chanting things after near falls. Some of it, I can kind of figure what it probably meant. It was like a "this is awesome" thing at one point. But for like 98% of the show, whatever these people were chanting, I have no fucking idea what they were saying. But boy, were they into it. That's all that matters. I don't really need to know what they were saying. They could have been insulting these people's mothers. I wouldn't have known. But boy, they were up for it. So they traded some three-way spots, which led to Tiffany taking control. Bayley tried fighting back. Tiffany hit an Alabama slam. Naomi was supposed to break up the pin. She was late. And so Bayley kicked out anyway. There were a few times here where Naomi looked like kind of like a gaming stream where it starts to lag. Looked like Naomi was lagging a little bit, trying to keep up with what was going on at a few different points. Naomi speared Tiffany through the ropes, and they fell to the floor. And then Tiffany, she fought back, and Naomi was up against the barricade over by the timekeeper's area. And Tiffany did a handspring back elbow on the floor into Naomi, who was up against the barricade. Tiffany got distracted by the crowd reaction, so Bayley hit a suicide dive and took her out. Naomi came off the barricade with a blockbuster on Bayley, and then she gave Tiffany a split-legged moonsault inside. Bayley was there, though, to break up the cover. Naomi hit Tiffany with a sit-out powerbomb for two. Naomi applied her Feel the Glow submission on Tiffany, but Bayley broke it up with a flying elbow drop. That's how you break. That's one way to break that move up. Bayley gave Tiffany a Bayley to belly for two. Stratton came back and gave Naomi an Alabama slam onto the edge of the announce table. And then she did the same to Bayley onto the French announce table. Back inside, Tiffany tried her prettiest moonsault ever on both women, but they both moved. Tiffany rolled through and then walked right into a 3D from Bayley and Naomi. They called it a 1D. Give me a fucking break. All right, it's a 3D. Call it what it is. Bayley and Naomi, they exchanged blows. Naomi tried a cradle. Bayley countered into one of her own, and she got the pin. And she retained the women's title. And after the match was over, Naomi smiled. Bayley was standing outside the ring. Naomi was in the ring on her knees, looking over at her friend. And she smiled, and she hugged Bayley after the match, and raised her hand. How understandable. How understanding of her. She just got beat here in this title match, but she was so happy for her friend. I'm so happy. Please. I would have kicked her head off her fucking shoulders. But that's me. I'm a heel at heart. What can I say? It's a good match. I thought it was a good match. It was one of the better triple threats I've seen recently. There were a few rough spots early, but there were also some really good ones. Trying to keep the pace up during the match. It's pretty incredible to me how over Tiffany Stratton is, considering she has only been on the main roster for 3 months. I don't even know if it's been a full 3 months yet. And this woman is, not only is she over, I mean, she gets cheers as well because the people like her. She's obviously very athletic. We knew that if you followed her in NXT. She comes from an athletic background. And she has taken to this quicker than most. And so she will go far. That does not mean that she has to go to the promised land right away. This outcome here, this was the right outcome. Tiffany Stratton, if I'm booking things, she's your Money in the Bank winner for 2024. She should get the briefcase. There's no need to rush the title onto her. And this finish here, I liked it because it was a logical way to protect Tiffany by not having her eat the pin. Naomi eats the pin, but it's kind of like a flash pin. You know, it wasn't like she got hit with a belly to Bayley or an elbow drop and got pinned. They were trading cradles, and Bayley was able to pull it off. So she gets the win, but it protects Tiffany from having to take a loss here in this match. So I thought it was smart. Now, I am seeing reports here that I will now try to verify about the WrestleMania announcement. I am looking right now to see if the announcement has been made, and I don't see anything. So I will give you an update as soon as I have one on the status of WrestleMania. Now, in the back, Jey Uso was warming up, and Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, and Tongaloa walked up to him, and they stared at him. No words. They just stared at him, and they walked right by him. Pulling up the rear was Paul Heyman, who was sweating bullets. And Heyman had a look on his face as if to say, I'm so sorry, I don't know what the hell's going on here. But again, he didn't say a word. And then he walked off. This is what you call foreshadowing. And then it was time for Jey Uso to challenge for his first World Heavyweight Championship that he was trying to win. Obviously, he challenged his cousin for the WWE title at SummerSlam last year and got screwed over by his brother. Here, he was challenging for the World Heavyweight Championship against the reigning champion, Damian Priest. So I am getting breaking news here that they have, in fact, made the announcement, it is official, that WrestleMania 41 is coming to Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas, Nevada, Saturday, April 19th and Sunday, April 20th. 2025. So to the surprise of no one, if you've been paying attention to all of the rumors over the past few weeks, WrestleMania is coming to Vegas, baby. Long overdue. Long overdue. I've been waiting for WrestleMania to come back to Vegas. First time since 1993. The last time they had WrestleMania in Las Vegas, they did it at Caesar's Palace. They built a little stadium there on site. They had about 16,000 people. I don't know what the capacity is for Allegiant Stadium, but when they were there for SummerSlam a few years ago, they had a lot of people there. Wasn't that the SummerSlam with the final Brock-Roman match where Brock used the tractor to lift up the ring? I think that was Allegiant Stadium, I believe. So there you go. 420, yes. We're getting a 420 WrestleMania this year, or next year, I guess. Snoop Dogg is going to be back. Snoop Dogg will be the host of WrestleMania. Well, that's awesome. I'm sure all the Minneapolis folks are very disappointed, but I mean, come on. Let's be honest here. If you're looking for a destination for WrestleMania and you have the choice of Minneapolis or Las Vegas, what are you going to choose? Are you going to choose Minnesota in April or are you going to choose Las Vegas? Come on. It's no contest. I mean, God, for God's sakes, if it was between New York and Las Vegas, and I say this as a New Yorker, if it was between New York in April and Las Vegas, I'm flying my ass to Las Vegas. Okay? There's no comparison there. Perfect destination for this. I haven't seen the logo, though. How's the logo look? They could have a lot of fun with that logo. Anyway, Jay entered through the crowd, and we had this incredible sight of all the fans doing the yeet pose, and they were, you know, bouncing up and down as Jay was coming through the crowd, but they all had their phones out. They all had their phones out, and they had all the lights, so it was like the fire, like the Bray Wyatt Fireflies. But just the sight of everybody doing that, I'm going to be very curious now to see if that transitions over here. They start doing that here on these shows back home. Midway through this match, JD McDonagh, he ran out and he used the middle rope to crotch Jay as he was getting back into the ring. Referee's attention was diverted, so he did not see it. He was tied up with Priest. After Priest got a two count, he saw that McDonagh was out there at ringside, and he did not like the fact that JD McDonagh was out there because he has made it very clear to the other members of the Judgment Day that he does not need their help. He does not want their help. He wants to come out. He wants to do this all by himself. So Priest was not happy about this. Jay super kicked McDonagh off the apron, ended up putting Priest down, and then he hit him with an Uso splash, only got a two count. Priest and Uso traded punches while they were on their knees. Then they were trading forearm strikes once they got to their feet. The hard camera, not the last time this would happen on the show, the hard camera was literally shaking as these two were on their knees going face to face. Okay, the building was shaking during this spot. They traded jumping enziguris that left both men down. Priest blocked a kick and then used a razor's edge to get a two count, which I hate. It's just, it sounds so wrong that you would use a razor's edge just to get a near fall. I fucking hate that. Priest went for the South of Heaven chokeslam, but Jay slipped out. He speared him, got a loud near fall out of that. Jay went up to the top rope, and then he dropped down to the apron once he saw Finn Balor hop the barricade. Now here he comes. And so Jay kicked Balor. Priest then unwittingly took advantage of the distraction. He put Jay down with the South of Heaven chokeslam. But he only got a near fall out of it. And Priest was showing great frustration over this. And these people, my God, they went wild because Jey Uso was still alive. Right? You got to keep hope alive. And these people jumped out of their seats because this match must continue. So Priest threw a spin kick at Jey that put him down. And now he's yelling at him. And he's motioning for him to stand up. Hits him with another spin kick. He goes for a third one. Jey catches him with a super kick. Jay threw three more super kicks and then speared him, and then he followed that up with an Uso splash. He had Damian Priest beat. He had this man dead to rights. JD McDonagh on the outside grabs Priest's boot and places it on the bottom rope right before the three count. Referee sees it, and he stops his count. Jay takes out McDonagh with a suicide dive. Then Jay sees Finn Balor rounding the bend on the outside, and he meets him with a spear. So McDonagh is down. Balor is down. Jay goes to the top rope. Priest, though, falls into the ropes, which then crotches Jay. Priest goes to the middle rope on the inside, grabs Jay by the throat, and he hits the South of Heaven chokeslam from the middle rope, and he gets the three count to retain. Damian Priest is still your world heavyweight champion. After the match, this is where the real story is. Balor and McDonagh, they pounced on Jay. Okay, the match is already over. So they pounce on this man. Damian Priest, though, shoves both of them away to a big pop from the crowd. He shoves them away. Balor tries again. Priest shoves him back into the corner. He even grabs him by the jaw. He grabs him by the chin. He's yelling at this man. He's getting all up in his face, and he's telling him it's over. It's done. Leave him alone. So McDonagh ends up standing between them. Priest then orders them to stand on either side of him, and he raises his arms, and he poses with the World Heavyweight title. A lot of interference in this match, but it played into the story after the match, and it had to happen that way. I mean, looking back at what happened here, it had to go down that way. Even with all of the interference, this was a good first title defense here for Damian Priest. It was helped by having such a hot crowd that was invested in everything they were doing. You had the building literally shaking at one point when they went face-to-face. There's been tension between Damian Priest and JD McDonagh now on TV for a while. This was the first time in a while that we have seen tensions boil over in this way between Damian Priest and Finn Balor. It's the first time that I can remember that Priest put his hands on him in the way that he did. And the first time that we have seen Damian Priest acting like a babyface. Calling off the dogs from attacking Jey Uso. The Judgment Day implosion, ladies and gentlemen, is coming. At least for Damian Priest. Damian Priest may yet end up having a Randy Orton in Evolution moment. But seemingly the implosion of the Judgment Day is upon us. Could that be why Rhea Ripley was not drafted with the rest of them? I'm still trying to make heads or tails about why people who were hurt were eligible to be drafted, but others weren't. Right? I can't really understand why Seth Rollins or CM Punk were eligible to be drafted. Charlotte Flair was not. Rhea Ripley was not. I don't really understand why that is. Maybe the fact that Rhea was not part of the group and drafted with them. Maybe the fact that there may not be a Judgment Day by the time she comes back. Maybe that has something to do with it. Here's what I think, though. Yeah, we're heading into Clash at the Castle. Well, we're heading into King and Queen of the Ring first, but then we're heading into Clash at the Castle next month. They're going to be in Glasgow. Drew McIntyre on the top of his game. Yes, indeed. Yes, he is. One of the best right now in all of WWE is Drew McIntyre. Just signed a fat new contract. Drew McIntyre is going to headline Clash at the Castle. And I think he will headline for the World Heavyweight title, which could be why I think he may win King of the Ring. If the winner of the King of the Ring gets a world title match on their respective brand or the title of their choice, even. I think it's going to be Drew getting that shot at Clash at the Castle. So I'm looking ahead and seeing Drew McIntyre and Damian Priest for the World Heavyweight title. Priest now is already teasing a potential babyface turn. And by the time we get there, now that show is not until June 15th. By the time we get there, it could be that things have broken down so much within the Judgment Day that Finn Balor, if not Balor and McDonagh, are the ones who ultimately cost Damian Priest the World Heavyweight title. And that is how Drew ends up becoming champion. You get the World Heavyweight title on Drew. When CM Punk is ready to come back, you could have Punk and Drew on Raw for the World Heavyweight title. That's where I see things headed right now. Now, we'll see how the story plays out in the weeks to come, but the way things are looking right now, I think that's the direction right there. I just don't see how you go into a show like Clash at the Castle in Scotland and not have Drew McIntyre in the title match in the main event. I don't see how you don't do that. So that has to be the match. And if that's the match, yeah, I mean, you could always have Punk cost Drew again. Then you're just kind of repeating what already happened at WrestleMania. I think it would make more sense to put the belt on Drew. And if Punk is cleared in time, you could have a big World Heavyweight title match at SummerSlam between those two. Doesn't mean that Punk has to win either, by the way. You know, by the time we get to it, I don't think Punk and Drew is going to be a one-and-done type of situation here. That could be the first of several matches between those two for the World Heavyweight title. Of course, this is all predicated on CM Punk not falling apart and being able to stay healthy, which is a big if, considering the last 2 or 3 years in his injury history. He's got to stay healthy first. You put him into a World Heavyweight title program right away, you're taking a risk. It is a risky proposition, but man, that's the biggest match they could do right now on Monday Night Raw, is McIntyre and Punk. Now, at this point in the show, they had the member from the French announce team. I believe his name was Philippe Chereau. I believe that was the man's name. He stood in the ring. He talked to the crowd in French. I have no idea what he said, but everybody was very happy. And Michael Cole told us that he had just informed the crowd that they set the largest gate for an arena show in WWE history. Again, when I'm done here, I want to go back and see what these ticket prices were. I want to see what the first five rows, I want to know what people paid for those seats. That's what I want to know. Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill against Asuka and Kairi Sane, the Kabuki Warriors, for the women's tag team titles was up next. Bianca and Asuka started things out. After a little bit of an exchange, we had Bianca tag out to Jade. She came in, she did a few spots, she looked good. Bianca missed the dive, and Asuka kicked her as Kairi distracted the referee. Kairi hit a wild flying crossbody from the top rope all the way down to the floor. Excuse me, and it caught Bianca more in the face than the body, but she wiped her out on the floor. Asuka and Kairi, they worked over Bianca after that. So exactly the formula that I talked about on the SmackDown stream last night, right? We were talking about this tag team match. I was doing predictions. You get the heat on Bianca for a while, let Jade simmer on the apron, and build to the eventual hot tag. And that's exactly what they did here. Asuka set up for a vertical suplex. Bianca hit one instead. She tried for the hot tag. She's reaching for Jade on the apron. Asuka, though, applied an armbar after Jade got knocked off the apron. There was nobody to tag. So Asuka applied an armbar. Bianca got to her feet, though, while hoisting Asuka up onto her shoulders. Kairi tagged in, saved her partner. Bianca fought them both off, and then finally, Bianca makes the hot tag here to Jade Cargill. She hits a springboard crossbody to both women, and then she drops Asuka with a pump kick. Cargill hands out some stinger splashes, which is exactly what Michael Cole called them. Stinger splash in one corner, stinger splash in the opposite corner. She gives Kairi a spine buster. Asuka, though, breaks up the subsequent pin attempt. And then, unfortunately, at this point, the match began to fall apart. Asuka and Kairi, they took turns hitting Jade with some strikes. Kairi hit a reverse DDT. And Kairi tried to make the cover. And the referee would not count. And the referee told her that you're not the legal woman. So Jade and Kairi, they kept wrestling. Even though we just heard from the referee that Kairi is not the legal woman in this match. So I'm not quite sure why he's just sort of backed off and allowed them to continue wrestling if, in fact, Kairi was not the legal woman. That doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. But Asuka did eventually tag in, which, again, made absolutely no sense. If Asuka is already the legal woman, why does Asuka need to tag into this match? So I don't know if the referee fucked up, if Kairi was legal and it was a referee error. I don't know who fucked up where, but that began this downward spiral here for the next 3 or 4 minutes in this match. So Kairi tagged back in so she could go back to do whatever they were going to do before. The Kabuki Warriors, they each applied arm bars to Jade and Bianca, but Jade and Bianca hoisted them up and hit one-arm power bombs, which I guess that was the spot they were building to, and that looked cool. So again, I can't put all of the blame here on Jade Cargill for this little breakdown. This whole stretch, though, was just not good. And this is where her inexperience is on full display. When you have a match and things begin to break down, people get lost, someone fucks up, and now you're trying to figure out on the fly, how do we get back to where we're, you know, supposed to be? Jade is not somebody who has the experience to be able to kind of take control and say, okay, here's what we do, right? Let's just go, let's do this, let's do that. She was just sort of like, she left her body there, like she was just waiting for Kairi to do something, waiting for Asuka to do something, waiting for them to lead, because she's not yet in a position where she can be the leader. That's where she gets exposed, and it makes her look bad. So it's not all her fault, but it was just like, ugh. You could just, I'm watching this going, please, somebody, save this. Where's Bianca? Like, get her back in there. It was rough. It was rough there. But Kairi hit Bianca with the assisted insane elbow. Jade, though, broke up the cover. And then came the finishing sequence. And whatever happened in the sequence I just got done talking about that was all weird and fucked up, she more than made up for it with this finishing sequence here. Jade caught Kairi flying off the top rope, and she got her then up onto her shoulders. At that point, then, she flipped her around so she's facing forward. Then she popped her up into the air and caught her on the way down, had the arms hooked for the chicken wing behind her, and then transitioned immediately into the Jaded and dropped Kairi face first down on the mat. fucking awesome. You got to watch it for yourself. Just this whole sequence of like three or four moves just to get to the Jaded looked fantastic. That should have been the finish. But they kept going, and Bianca had to hit her move, which she did. She hit the KOD to Asuka onto Kairi, and then Bianca covered Kairi and pinned her and got the three count to win the tag team titles for the both of them. Look, it fell apart for a few minutes, but the finish was great. I thought that was fantastic. It was the tale of two matches for Jade Cargill in that way. The longer she's in the ring, though, as time goes on, the more she'll be exposed to situations like this, and hopefully she'll get more comfortable and she'll know what to do and she'll be able to take charge. Tonight was not one of those nights, but they were able to move past it. Like I said, the finish was great. The finish was obvious. I mean, you had to know coming into this that they were going to put the tag titles on these two. I mean, how could you not? And I'll tell you why. The biggest reason I think that they put these titles on these two, because now that Bianca and Jade are the women's tag team champions, that means they float, which means they now can appear on both shows. And I think WWE would much rather have Bianca Belair at their disposal for Raw and SmackDown and have Jade at their disposal for Raw and SmackDown or even NXT instead of Asuka and Kairi. Now they have access to both women, so that they want to have them on SmackDown, they could have them on SmackDown. They want to have them on Raw, they could have them on Raw. And now you can keep the titles on these women for as long as you want until the time comes that you're ready to break them up. And then eventually we can get Bianca against Jade. But that's far off. We're not even close to being there yet. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. It's been a busy week for wrestling fans. Busy month, really. A lot of content to consume. And that's to say nothing of all the content that I consume on Netflix. Raw hasn't moved there yet. But did you know that Netflix has thousands of shows in its library, but you only have access to a fraction of it? It's true. They have different content available depending on where you're located. It's insane that you're paying for Netflix and not getting access to everything that it has to offer. Watching Netflix without using ExpressVPN is like paying for a gym membership but only being able to use the treadmill. Why would you do that? You wouldn't. And you shouldn't have to here either. So how do you unblock all of that extra content? Well, I'm glad you asked. ExpressVPN lets you change your online location so you can control where you want Netflix to think you're located. They have almost 100 different server locations, so you can gain access to thousands of new shows. And it doesn't just work with Netflix. You can use it with other streaming services like BBC iPlayer and YouTube. I like watching reruns of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. We were just talking about that on the stream the other night. I wish Uncle Phil were my uncle. I love Uncle Phil. Recently, I was able to watch it on Indian Netflix. It was simple. I just opened the ExpressVPN app. I selected India as my country. I tapped one button to connect. Then I refreshed Netflix and boom, there it was. And you can do this with tons of other shows too. If you're a fan of the original Star Trek series, you can find that on UK Netflix. It's actually kind of fun to fish around and see what you can find in different places. What I love about ExpressVPN, though, is how fast it is. I never experience any lag, no buffering, and it's compatible with all my devices, including my smart TV and my phone. It also encrypts my data so I can browse the web securely with no prying eyes. So be smart. Stop paying full price for streaming services and only getting access to a fraction of their content. Get your money's worth at expressvpn.com/solomonster. Don't forget to use my link at expressvpn.com/solomonster to get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. The main event was Cody Rhodes in his first defense of the undisputed WWE Championship against AJ Styles. Michael Cole said that AJ had special purple gear made to replicate the gear he was wearing the night that he wrestled the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, way back in 2003. They did not mention TNA, but that did happen in TNA back in 03. The camera was shaking as the match introductions were made. Jessica Carr, they said, became the first woman ever to officiate a main event WWE Championship match. They were having a pretty even match until Styles drove Cody's shoulder into the turnbuckle. And he made the shoulder his target. The announcers pointed out the match that Cody had with Carmelo Hayes on SmackDown last week, where he took that scary bump when he went for the Cody cutter and there was nobody there. And he landed full force, all of his weight, right down on that shoulder. I was worried that he may have hurt himself. Thankfully, he was okay, but they played it up here in the match like Cody's shoulder maybe wasn't 100%, and so AJ was going to focus on it. Styles cleared off the French announce desk, and the crowd booed. Cody fought him off, and they battled on the ropes. Cody tried for a delayed superplex. He was holding him there for several seconds. AJ slipped out. I don't know what the planned spot here was, because AJ slips out and lands on his feet, and Cody just falls backwards into the ring. So I don't know if that was supposed to happen or not, but that's how it played out. Styles tried for a lion salt. Cody got the knees up. Cody hit a power slam and a disaster kick for two. Cody then, at that point, took AJ out onto the apron, and he was setting up for a suplex. AJ, though, reversed it into a brainbuster. Brainbuster on the apron. And Cody rolls onto the floor. Styles rolls back into the ring because he's smart. He's been doing this for a while. He's got presence of mind. He knows he can't win the title on a countout, so I better roll my ass back into the ring to break the count. Then he immediately gets back outside. He tries for a PK because Cody was back up to his feet. Cody catches him, though, gets him in a powerbomb position, and then powerbombs him through the French announce desk. So that bought him a little bit of time to recover. Jessica Carr, her count gets up to 9. Both men dove back into the ring at the exact same time before the count of 10. So now both men start exchanging right hands before connecting on stereo kicks that land at the exact same time. AJ goes down, Cody goes down. So now Cody goes to one corner. AJ goes to the opposite corner. Cody is yelling at him, "You want to go again? You want to go again?" AJ's like, "Yeah, let's go again." So they did indeed go again. And then Cody hit the dusty punches. He hit the bionic elbow. He covered him. AJ kicked out. Cody went for the Cody cutter. It got blocked. They exchanged tombstone attempts. Both men failed to follow through. And then AJ suplexed Cody back first into the turnbuckles. AJ then gives him a backbreaker across the knee. And then he retreats out to the apron, where AJ Styles, at the age of, 46? He put on a lot of muscle mass, too, in preparation for this. Really, ever since he came back, he's jacked as shit. So he's physically as big as I've ever seen him. He's 46 years old, still hits a picture-perfect springboard 450 splash. Like, you could not have done it any better. Connects with the splash, goes for the pin. Cody kicks out at 2.5. AJ gets him up on his shoulders at this point, and he drops him with a burning hammer. Remember the first time we saw a burning hammer in NXT? I guess it would technically be considered WWE, but they had the Cruiserweight Classic. And it was in a match that I want to say involved Brian Kendrick. Although, again, I could be wrong. But I just remember Brian Danielson was on commentary for that match. And when he hit the burning, or whoever it was, hit the burning hammer, he freaked the fuck out. Like, I will never forget the reaction he had to a burning hammer. So it's a big deal when somebody gets dropped on their head. Cody took the bump safely, but the announcers played it up big. AJ covers him. Cody kicks out at 1. Kicked out of a burning hammer at 1. Cody is on his knees now. He's all fired up. He's telling Cody to bring it. Bring everything you got. Crowd is losing their minds. AJ's delivering kicks. No effect. Cody hits a Cody cutter. He covers. AJ kicks out. So now Cody sets up for the crossroad. Of course it was Kota Ibushi. How did I not remember that? Of course it would be Ibushi, because who else would it be? It would be Ibushi getting dropped on his head. Of course. Cody sets up for the crossroads. AJ counters out of it and then connects on the Pele kick. Now it's time. Now it's time for the phenomenal forearm. He tries for it. Cody catches him on the way down, though, with a super kick. Right to the sternum. And now Cody locks in the Kimura lock, which was very interesting. Very interesting choice here. Locks in the Kimura, which Brock Lesnar tried to beat him with at last year's Backlash. Remember the end of last year's Backlash in San Juan, how that match ended? I believe it was Cody was trapped in the Kimura, and then he rolled over on top of Brock, and he pinned him, and that's how he won the match. So this was a little bit of a callback here to his feud with Brock Lesnar. Cole pointed out that Cody got his arm broken by that move. Never said, though, who was the one doing the arm breaking. So Styles managed to power Cody up and out of the hold. He tries for the Styles Clash. Cody fights out of it. Crossroads attempt is countered. Cody runs the ropes. And off the top rope, basically an avalanche Cody Cutter. He connects with the Cody Cutter on the way down. A super Cody Cutter. Cody hooks the head, center of the ring. All it takes, one Crossroads. He covers AJ, and he gets the three count to retain the title. An excellent, nearly 30-minute-long main event here between these two men. A great first title defense for Cody Rhodes. AJ made him work for it. They played it straight with the finish. It was a clean win for Cody. There were no surprises after the match. There was no bloodline. There was no Uncle Howdy. There was no shenanigans. There was nothing. Cody just beat him straight up. I don't think we're done yet between these two, because Cody just does not have any other obvious challengers that are set up. So you've got King and Queen of the Ring coming up in a few weeks in Saudi Arabia. Can't imagine Cody is not going to be defending his title on that show. A rematch with AJ with some stipulation attached to it would make sense to me. And I think that's what we're going to get. Overall, this was a fun 3 hours for what I think I can safely say was the hottest, liveliest crowd for a WWE show that I have ever seen in my entire life. I was racking my brain trying to figure it. And Backlash in Puerto Rico last year had a great crowd, but this one topped that one. Because for every single match on this show, not just for one or two, or just for the hometown guy, if there was like a big homecoming for someone, from the start of this show to the very end, even going back to SmackDown last night, these people were up, they were loud. Yeah, some of the chants, the things they were singing, it could get obnoxious because they just would not stop. But I'll take that over a dead crowd and people sitting on their hands in apathy any day of the week. Any day of the week. It just makes the show so much more fun to watch. So, hats off. I don't wear one, but hats off to this crowd. They were fucking awesome. I cannot remember another crowd like this one. And as far as the matches themselves, nothing really stands out to me as an all-time classic match of the year type thing. Maybe Cody and AJ, because I thought their match was excellent. The opening match was just pure chaos. But again, it was taken from a B to an A, just because of the atmosphere in that building. Now, I broke in before with some breaking news, for those of you who may have missed it. The announcement was made earlier on. They were saving it for the Kentucky Derby. WrestleMania 41, Triple H did announce on NBC, is going to be taking place in Las Vegas, Nevada on Saturday, April 19th and Sunday, April 20th from Allegiant Stadium. And actually, I think that's Easter Sunday. I believe it is. So WrestleMania on Easter Sunday next year. That's going to be great. That's going to be great. Las Vegas is going to be a lot of fun as a WrestleMania location. So, especially everybody descends upon Las Vegas now. Just remember what they say. You know, what happens in Vegas, it stays in Vegas. Just remember that. Don't get too crazy now. What did you think of Backlash from Lyon, France? A whopping 89.5% thumbs up for this show so far. We've already got 2,100 votes almost in for the Twitter poll. Almost 90% thumbs up, 7.5% thumbs in the middle. And 3% gave this show a thumbs down. 3%, huh? Well, that's not bad. That's not bad. Go vote at Solomonster. That's where you got to go. You got to go to cast your vote. Don't let your vote go to waste now. I want to hear from you guys. So make sure you leave me some feedback on there. Let's dive on into your super chats here. It is a Saturday afternoon. It is just shy of 5:30. I want to thank everybody who is joining me for hanging out with me on a rare Saturday afternoon. I still have some work to do in preparation for episode 860 of the podcast. Now the Backlash is over, we could talk about that as well. So that'll be something for you guys to look forward to tomorrow. I'm going to go right from 860 in my car to the House of Glory show because it's Cinco de Mayo. We have a big show coming up tomorrow. All right, let's get to the early super chats that came in before I went live. So you will not see these on screen, but let's take care of these first. Let's take care of some business here first. And we're going to start with our boy, the Real CS. Real CS02 with a pair of super chats. Gosh, I hate that super Cody cutter. It scares me every time with how Cody lands. I wish he would stop doing it. Also, I don't know why people the WWE would have done the why people think WWE would have done the Uncle Howdy reveal tonight. I see them doing it either on TV or at the King and Queen of the Ring. Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I personally, I was not expecting anything with Uncle Howdy, any big reveal. I mean, they had another glitch. I didn't care enough to check out where it took me, but I don't know why people were expecting something on this show. It never felt to me like they were building something for this show. Like, it still feels to me like we may be a month or two away from whatever it is that they're going to do. Jacqueline Fowler. Hey, Solomonster, how would you rank these emotional WWE Championship wins? Eddie Guerrero at No Way Out, Jeff Hardy at Armageddon, Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 30, Kofi Kingston at WrestleMania 35, and Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania 40. I think they're all great. If I had to put one at the top of the list, though, I was there for two of them. I was there for Daniel Bryan, which was fantastic. And I was there for Kofi. I think in terms of emotion, I mean, of the two live ones I was at, Kofi. Kofi was the more emotional of the two. Out of all of these, though, I think it's between Kofi and Eddie. And I think I would go Eddie. I think I might go Eddie and then Kofi. Yeah, I think I might go Eddie and then Kofi and then maybe Cody and then Brian and then Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy I would have last. Jay Glow with the $4.99. In my 40 plus years of watching wrestling, that was the best crowd I have ever seen or heard. Maybe the best backlash ever. And that main event was fire. Yes, it was. It was a great main event. Great match. First time those two ever wrestled each other. Carlos Galban, great show tonight. That crowd was on fire all night long. Really need to know what they were chanting after every near fall. Also, what is a Samoan spike on a table supposed to do? I asked the same question. I have no idea what the purpose of doing that was other than simply to just set up for the RKO on the table. That's the real answer. That's why they did it. I miss Justin G. Justin G said, Justin G. He has a super chat in French. So I have no idea what it means, but it says woo 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 at the end of it. So there you go. Justin, thank you. Let's go to Bare Ass Godzilla with the $20 super chat. Bare Ass Godzilla. Lucky me, I can catch your show live today. The sound off got me through long college commutes back in the Lucha Underground days, and now your reviews are the number one thing I look forward to when I am at work. You are the GOAT. Hey, Bare Ass Godzilla, thank you, man. I appreciate that. OM2 Cool coming in with a $2 super chat here. With back-to-back years of hashtag backlash bangers, I think the big four should be changed to the big five. Also, backlash should always be international. Hell, send WrestleMania to France, despite what Nick Khan said. You know, if you send WrestleMania to France before London gets one, I think that those people would burn the city down. So, I wouldn't do that. Gareth Smith. This is my first time available catching your live stream. Been a fan watching your clips on TV tracks. Maybe 10 years. Keep up the great work. From Leeds, England, I'm going to Clash at the Castle. That's awesome. I'll tell you what, man. That Clash at the Castle crowd, they've got their work cut out for them after this show. I expect you guys to be loud. Mr. 201, Backlash was a fun. I guess he meant fun show. That crowd was nuts. My son loved Jay's entrance. My son found your channel. We will be going to his first event at Madison Square Garden for SmackDown. Do you mind giving my son Eric Jr. a shout out? Thank you, Solo. Hey, Eric Jr., what's going on, Eric Jr.? I hope you enjoyed Backlash. Apparently, he likes Jey Uso. Yeah, that Jey Uso entrance was fantastic, man. That was a lot of fun. But Eric, man, have fun at the Garden. It's a special building. I haven't been there in a while, but You will have fun at SmackDown, I promise you. Alex says, Brother Solo, with these international crowds having huge influences on the success of these pay-per-views, how do you see Triple H and WWE encouraging the U.S. crowd to be as energetic as the international crowd? I mean, there's only so much you can do. I mean, you're not going to... What are you going to do, beg them? Please make noise? You're going to have signs up on the Tron that says, applaud now, scream now. Here's what you should chant. It's got to be organic. The problem is, a lot of the American crowds suck. But then you also have a situation where we get the shows far more often than the international crowds do. So when you have a Raw or a SmackDown that comes to town and you've run that building over and over again, and it's a TV show as compared to a PLE, so you have commercial breaks. I've been to these TV tapings before. It's fucking miserable. They go dark. When they go into a commercial break, somebody will be standing in the ring for 4.5 minutes. They'll have video package after video package after video package. Then they'll come back live. And instead of going to the ring where this person's been standing there for 4.5 minutes, now we have a backstage segment. Then finally, they'll come back to the ring. It's just miserable. So it's not exactly, you know, an apples and apples thing. But there are some American crowds that just fucking suck. You know, but you also have to keep in mind, you're talking about the difference between pay-per-views and TV shows. I think a lot of the American crowds recently have been pretty good for the big shows. But we get them a lot more than they do. You know, and you start running France every month or every other month, right? They're not going to be this loud for every show, I guarantee. So you can't beg for a reaction. The best thing that Triple H can do is just give the people the best possible show that they can and just hope that it connects. But you're not going to get reactions like this. You're also talking about Europe, right? They have like soccer chants and all kinds of chants. You know, it's a different culture. It's just a different place. It's not going to be the same here as it is there. I wish some of these crowds would be more lively. Corpses Christi, yeah. Right, I'm looking at you, Corpses Christi. Chris Miner, keep up the great work, Solo Monster. You are my MFS. Am I your MFS? I like being your MFS. Ty Arts, pleasure as always, Solo. French food and wrestling with the family, the best. Who should host WrestleMania next? And your ideal accompanying meal for it? Well, we already know who's getting it next. Going to be Las Vegas. My meal. I don't know if I'll be there or not, but if I were one day going to return to WrestleMania, and let's say I was going to Las Vegas, honestly, it could be anywhere. It doesn't have to be Vegas. I don't associate a particular cuisine with Las Vegas. I associate a lot of things with Las Vegas. Food is not one of them. But if I needed a meal to get me in the right mood, man, I'm getting myself a good filet mignon. Getting myself a good piece of steak, baked potato. There you go. That's what I'm getting. Only from the best steakhouse. Ty Art says, the last WrestleMania has taken place, hypothetically. What do you name wrestling's new Super Bowl? And dare I say it, Cody Rhodes will be a better heel. So we can't call it WrestleMania anymore? What do I name it? I don't know. Wrestlepalooza? I don't know. I have no idea. Ryan Armstrong, if you remember, Tongaloa was Camacho in WWE. Wow, I didn't know that. Thanks, Ryan. Ryan, thank you for the $2. OM2 Cool, the monster who never sleeps. Thank you, Brother Solo. I said I'll sleep when I'm dead. We got a lot coming up. We streamed last night. We're doing this show. I got to do the podcast for tomorrow. I got Hog tomorrow. We got Raw Monday. We got a bunch of stuff coming up this week. It's going to be a big week. The Real CS says, the way Tama took a beating in that tag match reminds me of old school where the vets would haze the rookie to test them, if that makes sense. I'm thinking of Daniel Pewter in the Royal Rumble in 2005. Dave Joseph, with the $9.99. What's up, brother? This is my first super chat ever. Just wanted to show love to the pod. Your show gets me through my work days. Much love from Palm Beach. Shout out all the way to Palm Beach. Dave, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Zach Jones with the 10 spot. Today was really fun. Am I the only one that was relieved that Styles against Cody was not a letdown like Styles against Nakamura at WrestleMania 34? I was kind of worried that it would be a snoozer. I hadn't even thought of it. I saw Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles, and I thought, if they're going to headline the show, it can't be anything but at least very good. It ended up exceeding even those expectations. Because AJ, it's been a while since AJ has had like a real banger in this company. And I think in his mind, maybe he just wanted to show that, hey, and he said it in his promo even last night. Yeah, he's getting older, but you know what? He could still go out there and deliver a match like the one he gave on this show. That's why I wouldn't mind seeing them run it back again. Ty Arts says, Bobby Lashley equals the Tiger Woods of wrestling. He's great. He is great. I wouldn't compare him to Tiger Woods, though, because Tiger Woods is kind of a prick. But Bobby Lashley is awesome. The Juliet 316 says, Viva WrestleMania in Las Vegas. Yes, indeed. Bobby's World, WrestleMania 45, Bloodline versus Bloodline, 20 versus 20, winner take all of the titles, including the women's titles, if they want. WrestleMania 45, that's being generous. I'm looking ahead to WrestleMania 48 with this stuff. Ty Arts with a couple of super chats. Taker or Austin? Who is better and why? It's all subjective. Me personally, I'm a Stone Cold guy. The Stone Cold is awesome. Stone Cold is real. When he goes out there, you knew shit was about to go down. And I've never had... In all my years of being a wrestling fan, I can't ever think of another person who just when their music hit, just had the crowd in the palm of their hand in the way that Steve Austin did. It's unbelievable. Hey, Ty Arts, thank you, man. Thank you for all the super chat love from him, man. I appreciate that. Psychopathic Savior, forget 7 stars. I'm giving Cody versus AJ 7 french fries. I'm going to be having some french fries in a little bit, too, when I have dinner. Ty Arts says, eldest brother Jim and I enjoyed Backlash, you to man. Ty, thank you again, man. Arabian Night 2000. Some reports saying that Jacob Fatu may start in NXT for a short run, similar to how Dragon Lee did, would make sense since NXT's men's division got fleeced in the draft. Oh, I don't know. I don't know about that. Where are these reports from? I'm going to have to check this out. I don't know about that. You know, had they not just gone and debuted Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa on the main roster and had them bypass NXT, I might have been okay with that. How are you going to justify that? How can you justify throwing those two on the main roster, but Jacob Fatu has to go to NXT first? The hell's that? Adam Goss with the $12. Do you think Priest could break up Judgment Day and turn babyface? Could this also mean that with the likely huge reaction when Rhea returns that she is also a babyface? Rhea's going to be a babyface when she comes back, regardless of whether they want her to be or not. And so I think both of them could be babyfaces at that point. I mean, they're clearly building to a babyface Priest after what you saw tonight. Alex Schmidt, which was better, Backlash 2023 in Puerto Rico or Backlash 2024 in France? I like both shows. You know, Backlash 2023, I know Bianca and Io had a really hot opening match. I loved that Damian Priest Bad Bunny match. I really did. All the cameos. It was so much fun. That's really all that stands out to me, though, about that show. This show, there were a lot of really good matches. You know, an excellent opener, an excellent main event. Really good World Heavyweight title match. I would give the edge to the France Backlash over the Puerto Rico one, but they were both very fun. Both very fun shows. If I had to give one the edge, though, it's this one. Holiday 197. Hey, Solo. Although I am excited to see WrestleMania in Las Vegas, Minnesota is yet again missing out. What I have heard, they have unfortunately lost out on several occasions. Hopefully, WrestleMania 42 is locked in for them. Well, people thought that WrestleMania 41 was locked in for them. So I don't think anything is ever truly locked in. I know right now there's something going on in the city over there where I think Uber and Lyft, the two key rideshare companies, have pulled out. My guess is they're going to work that out very quickly. But if that goes on for an extended period of time, not having Uber and Lyft is a pretty big fucking blow. I don't know if that factored into this decision. Probably not. But that's something to keep an eye on if that doesn't get resolved, because if I were going to bring an event to Minnesota and you had Uber and Lyft pull out of the city, I would think twice about that. Trill Mexican, 305. April 19th is my birthday. Looks like I know where I'm celebrating my 37th birthday and 7-year marriage anniversary next year. Solo Monster is the man. It's going to be a fun weekend for Trill Mexican. Well, you get the double whammy, huh? You get the, Quiz, it's fine. Quiz, it's fine. The Judgment Day make fun of it themselves on Twitter, so it's fine. Just leave it alone. Adam says that main event was awesome. Crowd went wild, and so good to see the top title match without outside interference. Yeah, it was nice. It was nice. Stefan with the $5 says it was weird to watch the PLE in European time and not wait until 2 a.m. and be awake until the early morning hours. Greetings from Croatia. Thank you, Stefan. See, we have viewers here from all over the world. Some like these afternoon shows because they get to join live, unlike all the other shows I do where they usually don't, because I'm up until the wee fucking hours of the night. So it's like 4 a.m. where they are. So I'm sure you guys are loving this. Anderson Blitz, I'm hoping for WWE to do a pay-per-view in Ecuador one day. Do they have a stadium in Ecuador? Maybe they could do a stadium show there. Holiday, I'm hoping they go all out on the WrestleMania 41 stage with the Vegas theme. This has the potential to be among the best WrestleMania backdrops. Going to be hard to top what they did in Hollywood for 39. I thought that one was fantastic. 33 and 39 are the best stages for WrestleMania that they have ever done. Timothy Tillis with the $10. Hey, Solo, just got back from eating some delicious Mexican food and drinking great margaritas to see you do what you do best. Keep it up. The wrestling world needs more people like you. Thank you, Timothy. I hope the margaritas were good. I'm jealous. I have not had Mexican in a while. I may have to correct that this week. Timothy also says, I will be on Monday Night Raw for the third...
It's a direction you can fuck.
Oh, no. Darth Panic is telling me where I can go. Hey, Darth, thank you for the $23 super chat with Cowboy Rock. But Tim says he will be on Raw for the third time on May 27th at in Savannah. Going to be fun again. Bring a sound off sign. Just remember to write stuff on both sides of it. Apparently that's the new thing now. You got to have things written on both sides of the sign or else they may not let you in. I don't know. That may have just been the one arena. I forgot who told me that. Every building has their own way of handling signs. So ridiculous. Paul Pompey. Who do you think Cody should feud with for the title that leads to a Hell in a Cell match? Keep up the great work. Randy Orton. Whenever he feuds with Randy Orton, man, you got to get a few matches out of that. I could see Cody and Orton doing some pretty good business inside Hell in a Cell. MLK010, I hope WWE gets the rights to use Gorillas of Destiny's theme from New Japan. It is a banger. You will not get their theme from New Japan. You will get Def Rebel, and you will like it. How do you like that, MLK? Jay Glow with the $9.99 on a recent episode of the 700 Club, Hulk Hogan recounted a story of receiving a voicemail from Rowdy Roddy Piper 2 days after his death in 2015. What are your thoughts? Yeah, well, they played that voicemail. There was some A&E special. Might have been on Piper. So the voicemail is real. Whether or not Hogan didn't see it until 2 days after Piper died, I don't know, because it's Hulk Hogan. And so even when he's telling the truth, I automatically assume he's lying because he lies more often than not. If he's breathing, if his lips are moving, I assume that he's lying. So it's possible that he's telling the truth because that voicemail really does exist. I don't know when he got it. Hogan says a lot of things and I just assume he's just full of shit. So... oh, look who it is. It's our boy. I was wondering if he was going to show up here tonight. It's A.B. motherfucking K. Dropping in with a super chat. I believe that was a $400. I don't have the amount in front of me, but I believe that was a $400+ super chat bomb. And I just realized that his initials are missing. Let's get him up on the lower left-hand corner. There he is. He's tattooed into the stream, ABK, with the $400 super chat bomb. Holy shit. There you go. He didn't want to be left out. He didn't want to be left out here from this backlash stream. He had to flex his muscle. He had to show people who's boss. The final boss, the real final boss, is ABK. $412 super chat bomb from the man. So Jay Glow, I hope that answers your question. It's a real thing. It's a real voicemail, but did Hogan only get it 2 days later? I'll let you figure it out whether you think that happened or not. JDF VA, this is going into the filet steak budget. Thank you, man. These filets, man, I mean, they're expensive. These filet mignons, these pieces of meat here at these steakhouses can get very costly here. ABK just bought me a week's worth of steak dinners. So I appreciate that very much. Darth Panic with the $23 super chat. Do you think at some point Dominic will turn babyface? I would like to see Rey and Dominic reconcile and Rey passing on his mask and the Mysterio title to Dominic. Thanks for all your hard work. I earned my gold skull today. Oh, how about that? He's got a gold skull in the chat. Awesome. Well, congrats to you. We got our gold skulls, we got our red skulls, and we have our green skulls. All of our channel members, I love you all. But do I think Dominic will turn face? I mean, everybody's going to turn face. Everybody at some point is a heel, unless you're Ricky Steamboat. Everybody at some point is a heel or a babyface. Dominic, I think, has a babyface run in him at some point. Especially if they keep him and Rhea together. If Rhea's going to go babyface, he may go babyface by default when she does. I do think a cool way, though, for Rey to end his career when he's ready to call it quits is to do a mask match with his son and lose. I think that would be cool. Hey, Michael Cuomo, everybody say thank you to Michael. He just gifted 5 channel memberships. That's 5 more. Man, we're running up the list of new channel members here. How high will it go? There he is. There he is. There's our boy. ABK, this is how the crowd reacts, not AEW in Winnipeg. Yeah, you know, it's so strange because they were in Winnipeg on Wednesday. Kenny Omega, I mean, he got a good reaction, but like that whole angle, the way it was playing out when they were beating him up, it got heat, but it didn't get the level of heat I would have expected in his hometown. So that was a little disappointing. Yeah, no, I mean, the French crowd blew Montreal, or not Montreal, they blew Winnipeg out of the water. But ABK, man, again, I salute you, sir. It means the world to me. DEH says, if we get Gunther Ilya, I would have Ilya beat Gunther. I don't know. don't know how I feel about that, because Gunther just suffered his first loss. Now you want him to lose again? I don't think I could get behind that. Quizzical one with the $4.99. For the hardest working podcaster, you said Stratton wins women's Money in the Bank. Who wins the men's, and when does he cash in? Don't know when he cashes in, but I'm wondering if maybe we should consider LA Knight for that spot. Last night I was against the idea, but the more I think about it, I think he's got to be in the conversation. Beyond LA Knight, though, who would I have that could believably cash in and become world champion? Punk? He's won two of them before. I mean, it's not really that far-fetched to think that CM Punk could win his third Money in the Bank. I don't know. I need to think on that. Stratton to me is a no-brainer though for the women's. I think we may be looking at Tiffany Stratton, Women's Money in the Bank, and Nia Jax, Queen of the Ring. I do. Woody Allen's right-hand man. Why do all tag matches follow the same formula? Isolate one person, hot tag. They run wild, turns into a quick tornado, and then the finish. Well, because that's the formula that has worked in wrestling for decades. That was the formula in old school NWA. Stick to what works. Otherwise, I guess you could always have a squash, right? You could do a squash match if you want to, but I mean, it's a formula that has worked for years and years. You just have to have the right people involved. Well, there you go, man. You guys were something else here with these super chats, man. Holy shit. We also chalked up upwards of 20 new channel members so far here today. So welcome to all of our new members. Make sure you put those emojis to good use. The Be the Booker goal was 500 likes. A very meager goal. I thought that was very, very easy to hit. We are currently at 609. So, thank you guys. We smashed the record, and that means, or the goal rather, not the record. We had a little malfunction last night with the Be the Booker where I jinxed it. I spoke before I finished. I thought we were headed for a clean sweep, and then Rosa Mendez popped up on screen, and that was the end of that. So, I've learned from my mistake. I'm going to keep my mouth shut as I do this. And so, let's go ahead and Be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
Hey, you know, we have some people joining us live who normally don't get the chance to. This may be their first live Be the Booker. It's exciting. All right, tag team Be the Booker. We begin here with the Street Profits, who just lost yet another title match the other night. I feel like they've lost quite a few of them. They are former SmackDown Tag Team Champions, but they have not been champions for quite some time. So we have the Street Profits, fresh off their loss to Grayson Waller and Austin Theory on SmackDown last night. And they're going to be taking on the team of Al Snow and Steve Blackman, Head Cheese. I liked Head Cheese. And I don't even like cheese. But I liked Head Cheese. This was their way of trying to give Steve Blackman a personality. And I don't know if it worked or not, but I was entertained by it. I mean, look at the absurdity of this photo. You have Steve Blackman, who has murder in his eyes, staring a hole through Al Snow with a giant block of cheese on his head. And in the background is a mannequin head. This was the absurdity of the Attitude Era. All right, women's Be the Bookers. Yeah, that gets a bell from me. You don't like it? Too bad. Go book your own territory. Women's Be the Booker. We begin with Cora Jade. This is before she was corrupted and went heel. This was still skateboard babyface Cora Jade. So innocent. This is like a totally different person now. Cora Jade. One-on-one with Mariah May. I bet they're on some people's Mount Rushmores. Mariah May and Cora Jade. They could certainly fight any day of the week. I'll be tuned into that match. Okay, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not saying a word. My lips are sealed. Let's book our main event. We begin with the American Badass, The Undertaker. This is Kid Rock Undertaker from the year 2000. And it will be The Undertaker, appropriately, in the main event. It will be the American Badass taking on Ilya Dragunov. How's that for a match? The Undertaker against Ilya Dragunov. I like that. And we got ourselves a clean sweep. You know why? Because I didn't speak out of turn. I kept my mouth shut so I didn't jinx it, and look what happened. See, if I would have done that last night, it all would have worked out well. We got ourselves a clean sweep in Be the Booker. That's right. I see Mariah. I'm a simple man. I see Mariah May. I automatically give it the bell. I'm a simple man. What can I say? Base Beerus, thank you for the $2. I have no idea what you're saying there, but thank you. Prince Vegeta, could you make a returning Brock Lesnar a challenger for Cody, or is it too soon? I mean, look, you have the history between them. There's, I suppose, a story there where he earned Brock's respect, and now Brock is back to try to take the title away from him. I don't have any interest in seeing it, though. We already got 3 matches between them. Why do we need another? We need more? Can we get away from Brock and focus on people that they actually have on their roster? I wouldn't do it. I would not do that. Base Beerus says Blackman was going to wreck people in the Brawl for All. Yeah, he's a scary man. I would not want to mess with Steve Blackman. And OM Too Cool. Speaking of Al Snow, his EU championship run, laughing my ass off. I tell you what, he made the European title very, very interesting, very fun. Because every week he would come out on TV and he would be dressed up as someone from a different European country. So if he was coming out representing France, he would come out with a beret, he'd have a baguette, he'd have a poodle with him. You know, he played off all the different stereotypes that you could possibly play off of. So he would come out from Spain, from, you know, from England, from Italy, all different kinds of countries here. And I was entertained by it. At least he tried to incorporate the fact that it was a European title. He tried to make that part of it relevant and incorporate something into it. So I always enjoyed that. Well, thank you guys for all of the super chats and the memberships and all of the support. This was a fun show. And we are in the middle of a very busy weekend and week, especially for me and here on the channel coming up this week. If you missed the SmackDown recap last night, I know some of it now is not relevant, but there was some good stuff on there. You can go back and check that out. Episode 860 of the Sound Off is going to be dropping tomorrow. There is also a House of Glory show, and we are bringing in, it was just announced yesterday, added to the show. It's our Cinco de Mayo show. We have brother versus brother in the main event, Rey Fénix against Penta in HOG. But also just added to the show from AEW, Daniel Garcia is going to be joining us on Cinco de Mayo. And I'm sure that he will be doing the dance, probably more than once. I don't know that it would be with me, but he'll be doing the dance. So try to get tickets to the show if you can. If not, it'll be streaming Raw Monday night. Of course, I'll be live with you then. And if you missed the announcement, I am the new co-host for Tuesday Night Titans with JD from New York over on his channel every Tuesday night live at 8:30 Eastern Time starting this Tuesday, May 7th. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to have some good debate and discussion about pro wrestling, all kinds of topics. So bring your questions if you have questions for the first show. I want to blow this show up as big as we possibly can. I want to have as many people there as we can. So make sure you head over to that channel, JD's channel, on Tuesday. I'm looking forward to that. That kicks off this Tuesday. So you got me today. You got me tomorrow. You got me Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Friday night. It's going to be a busy week. Busy week. There you go. I have to do the dance. I make no promises. I can't make any promises to you. He wants me to do a dance so I can make it a super chat, so it can join the super chat with me with Swerve and Nana doing the dance back in December. I can't make any promises. I don't think anybody really wants to see me dance. I'm not really sure there's an appetite for that. We'll see, though. Anything can happen. Be well. Stay safe. Thank you for hanging out with me here on a Saturday afternoon. Have yourselves a great rest of your night. Go enjoy dinner. And we'll do it all over again this week. Don't forget, episode 860 of the podcast dropping tomorrow. I'll see you guys then.